everybody. My name is Ellie.
And my name is Jessie. And this is All Ideas Are Bad Ideas,
the podcast about the things we believe in our hearts to be perfect, but we know in our minds are fundamentally flawed.
Our bad ideas focus for this week is Scott Pilgrim versus the World.
So, Scott Pilgrim versus the World. I just love this movie so much.
Like, yeah, we always have to prelude with how much we love these things, because we only, like, pick things that we actually do enjoy on some level.
Right, and I, like, super forgot that I loved this movie. Like, when it came out in high school, my friend and I were super lit because we wouldn't stop calling everything epic, and the tagline was an epic, epic of epicness, and we were just like, an epic, epic of epicness? I am ready for an epic, epic of epicness! And then I was.
I just love this movie because, I mean, I saw it when it came out, and then I realized it was based on a graphic novel series, and I went and read the graphic novel series, and since then I've read them quite a lot and also watched the movie quite a lot, so it's just become an all-encompassing kind of, I don't know, geek thing that I enjoy.
Yeah, I still haven't read the graphic novels because I'm poor and I just can't buy things. And so my library has never had a copy of all six of the books.
Oh, that's a
problem. I've always been at libraries that'll have like 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 or like 1, 3, 7. And I'm like, I bought 7.
One and maybe two in Barnes and Nobles because those are the ones that you have to wait like months for if you want to get them at the library. But like the later ones, you can wait like, you know, maybe you wait a week and then somebody turns it back in and you can read it. So
it's a big pain. So yeah. It's still on my list of things to read, but Sugargirl has not succeeded at it yet.
And I suppose we should go ahead and say we have lots of bad ideas for this movie, but again, it's going to be kind of like our last episode where not all of our bad ideas this time are about the way the movie was made or written, necessarily. There'll be a little bit of that, but most of it will be character choices, because honestly, this movie's pretty much a work of art. The cinematography that went into it, the writing, the development of characters, which, of course, a lot of that happened in the graphic novels and then was adapted to the screen, but it's a brilliant adaptation. You don't feel like you're missing anything. You feel like it's a very cohesive story that all comes together and you get a real sense for it. And the cinematography is downright beautiful. The kind of colors that they have and the almost surreal way that they show things sometimes and the way that it feels like a comic or a video game. It's really brilliant.
Yeah, it's a super functional. It's the cinematography functions very well in the aspects of the story because this is very much a story that's like based on a video game. And if you haven't watched the movie, then first of all, you probably shouldn't be listening to this podcast because as we've mentioned before, we might be grain-free, we might be dairy-free, but we're definitely not spoiler-free. So make sure that you stop listening now before we ruin Scott Pilgrim for you and go and watch this wonderful, ridiculous romp through Toronto.
You'll have a fun time. It's a good watch.
There's so many famous people in it also, and you'll just enjoy watching.
Yeah, that's one of the weird things about this movie, because when it came out, some of those famous people weren't actually famous yet. Like, you get to see, like, kind of a pre-famous Chris Evans and a somewhat pre-famous Anna Kendrick. And
right, before they got super massive, mega star wattage.
Before everybody knew exactly who they were.
Right. It's a good one. It's a fun time. So we just wanted to, like, briefly introduce that, just that you really need to go watch it because it's pretty.
And then from now on, we're going to assume that you have watched it and we're just going to talk about the movie. So,
spoilers, they are coming. Be prepared.
Be prepared.
I'm glad that I'm not the only person that always thinks.
I never think more than that. I just think that one line and then my brain is done. We're moving on.
I don't think I know any more words of that song. Anyway, okay, we're going back. We're going back to Scott Pilgrim. We're ready to fight the evil exes, probably.
Yeah, okay. Maybe. Thinking about the evil exes, here's my first bad idea for this ep. The fashion sense of all the evil exes. Because, okay, this is a series where fashion is taken very conscientiously. Like Brian Lee O'Malley, the guy who drew the books,
it's been, you know, people have talked about how very conscientious he was about the way that his characters dress. I mean, even in the movie, you hear that, like, you know, the fact that Ramona dyes her hair a different color every week shows that she's kind of fickle and she doesn't like to settle on anything. And you, if you look at all the characters, and their clothes really do show kind of who they are. Like, even young Neil and Knives, like, the way that they dress kind of gives you an idea of their personality.
Right.
But it's all pretty within the standard of normal. Like, all those people are wearing clothes that you would see at, you know, people who have graduated college or in high school or, you know, whatever ages those characters are.
Right.
They're pretty normal clothes. I mean, Scott's jacket's, like, the most normal, like, Canada jacket that you could ever find, you know?
Right.
Like,
so then, to have all the evil exes be the most dramatically dressed, I think is so telling. But it's such a bad idea in their port, because everybody else is over here having, like, a normal fashion sense, and they're showing up in, like, the most extravagant outfits. I mean,
right.
the first evil ex shows up, and Wallace shouts from the balcony, "Are you a pirate?" Like, I mean, he's dressed that extravagantly.
Right. Well, and, like, honestly, like, in some ways, the exes, like, themselves even acknowledge it, because the guy, when Wallace goes, "Are you a pirate?" goes, "Pirates are in this season!"
Right. Yeah. Like, they know that they are...
ridiculous.
I think they're just ridiculous.
It's a really, like, outward portrayal of the sort of inward insecurity that would cause someone to join something that's literally just a league of evil exes bent on, like, preventing one woman from having another relationship with anybody else, and not even with themselves, but with, like, that douche music guy, Gideon.
Right. Okay, that's my other bad idea. Why would you join the League of Evil Exes if you knew from the start that you're not getting Ramona back? Like, I would understand if they all kind of thought, like, it was a competition, like, whichever evil ex actually defeats Scott is the one that gets to, like, date Ramona. Like, that would make sense to me.
Right.
They're all like, oh yeah, we're all gonna join up, and I'm gonna be the one to take him down, and I'll get my girl back. Like, if they're all still bitter about losing Ramona, but, like, that's not it. They're all just like, we're here to kill Scott Pilgrim so that Ramona and Gideon can be together.
Right.
Like, what? What it?
How
why?
Does this
that
help
such
you?
Such a bad idea. This isn't helping you at all. You get your ass beat, and Gideon gets his girlfriend back, and you still lost Ramona. Your life is not improved.
Right. All, like, you've got is, like, a rap sheet. So I just like had a realization that I have a question about the League of Evil Exes. Do you think they took some guy down before Scott? Like, do you think?
No, they don't, because it's, like, explained at the end of the movie. So it's shown that Gideon is the one that got the League together, right?
Right.
But he got them together just for Ramona, because he
right.
was the last ex.
Right.
So Ramona broke up with Gideon and moved to Toronto, and he got the League together and sent them out after Ramona just as she was beginning to date Scott.
Okay.
So, like,
I guess that does
fast.
Make sense.
Like, because she lived in New York with Gideon.
And then
broke
she
up with
moved,
him, moved
to,
Toronto.
To Toronto.
And that's,
okay,
you know, when the movie starts.
Okay. Because she seemed so, like, Ramona throughout the movie seems kind of like, oh, no one should have to deal with this. And, like, how would you even know that, like, people were going to have to deal with it if it hadn't happened
right.
before?
I think it might be... They never talk about that. They never talk about how Ramona knows that the evil exes are going
to
happen.
I'd like
but
to
like,
imagine that Gideon sent her a really dramatic letter.
Yeah, I was thinking either that or, like, the chip in the back of her head.
Oh,
the one
yeah.
That means that Gideon's always in her head, that Gideon was there just kind of taunting her, like, hey, I joined a league, ready to get your boyfriend's ass kicked and come back to me yet. Like, you know, kind of along
right.
those lines. So she's like, well, here it comes.
That would make sense. That would make sense.
Right. But they don't talk about that. They talk about how Gideon, you know, gets everybody's emails and it takes, like, God forbid,
two hours.
He's the most dramatic. He's the worst idea. Just his personality is such a bad idea.
Such a vomit.
Him being himself is just such a problem.
He's like a puke. He's a puke stain on the world. Like, I can't handle Gideon. He is my least favorite
he's
of the exes.
He's like, if, like, the other exes, you can kind of see how, like... I don't know. There's a redeeming quality you could probably find in them, but Gideon's just like, he's an asshole.
He's
like,
the worst.
He's a smarmy asshole. And how could you not hate him? Like, even Scott's band, like, even the Sex Pistols bombs, when they get joined, they, like, think it's good, and then Scott shows up, but they're playing for him, and they just kind of hate their lives. They're
right.
Like, this is the worst.
Yeah.
The worst.
Well,
why,
like,
are we here?
The thing about the other exes, too, is that, like, they're sort of comically evil. Like, the first guy shows up, and he has freaking dancing demon hipster chicks with him, and, like... You know, the emo girl with her studded belt and, like, using it like a whip and stuff, like, but,
right,
like...
or, like, the guy using all his stuntmen to, like, beat up
right.
somebody outnumbered.
Whereas,
like, they're all evil because they're defeating Scott, and they're all evil because they're going to beat him up, but it's not, like, a big-tier evil. It's not, like, they're super bad people kind of evil. It's just
right.
that, like,
well,
but,
and, like,
their actions are insidious, but...
And, like, the thing about... Gideon, too, is that, like, his evil is, like, a real-world kind of evil, you know? Like, yeah, he has a chip in her head, which is not real, but, like, saying that someone, like, got into your head and they, like, really, like, are kind of
he's
emotionally abusive
bastard.
And, like, that she treats her really poorly, like, it's not necessarily, like, the rest of them were on good terms in their relationship until Ramona broke up with them, or, like, they, you know, they... parted their ways. It wasn't necessarily like
right.
It's
they
not like
healthy relationships, but they were always pretty equal. Like she and another guy would both be beating up people, or she and another guy would both be just setting things on fire.
Right.
Like she and another girl would both just be like flipping off the world. Like
right.
You
they
know,
were
but,
young.
Like, it was always both.
Right. And it was like young people who were both young and sort of in the same position. Like because she talks a lot about how like you know the first guy like he was the only non-white non-jock in the school, so they like
right.
got together and like. There's, like, the implication that they're sort of in similar positions of power, whereas with, like, Gideon, like, he clearly has lots of money, he clearly has lots of, like, influence, and he is in this relationship with this woman who is 22, 23, like, she's not very old, I can't remember how, I know she has her box, but I can't remember how old she is, like, there's, like, it's a more, like, actual kind of evil and not like a comic book kind of evil, whereas like you know the rest
right.
of them are like cartoon violence and like flying punchy kick fights, whereas and like
right or like battles of the bands with like huge like sound monsters
right
like, it is a very comic book video game, like you defeat the bosses or whatever and gain another level. And but Gideon is literally like he put her in an abusive relationship. I mean, her whole thing about how, like, he basically ignored her.
Right.
Until she left. And then he could not stand her being anywhere else.
Right.
Like, that's unhealthy. Like, and that's, but that's a lot of real world relationships that are abusive are exactly like that. So
right.
Right.
It's more of a, like,
kind of
real
evil.
Life evil than, like, a, you know, oh, fireballs and... demon dragon sound monsters and armies of stuntmen, like
right yeah no for
vegan
sure. So,
powers like
it's an evil actually worth fighting against
right
regardless of what you're fighting for, which I think is somewhat of the point of the end of the
right
movie,
when
he learns that like he shouldn't be fighting for Ramona necessarily,
he should be
she's
fighting
not like she's not his prize, and that's the whole problem, is that other people see her like that.
Right.
Like somebody has Ramona. So
right.
She's like, I shouldn't be fighting for Ramona. I should be fighting for me, because I think you're a douchebag, and I think you deserve to be taken down, and I think
right.
what you're doing is wrong.
Right, yeah. I think that that's very, like, it's an important distinction between Gideon and the rest of the exes, and Scott and the exes, and, like,
yeah.
a real sort of turning point right there at the end of the film. Which is, I mean, it's also a very, like, clearly outlined turning point. Scott earned the power of self-respect and, like, pulls the sword out of
his
chest.
Out of his chest, yeah.
Right. So.
No, and I think this bad idea leads us into a good idea about how the movie is written and deals with this sort of thing. Because it does do a very good job at the end with that.
Right. It's, it sort of undercuts some of the worse stuff in the film.
Right, the stuff you might not have felt comfortable about throughout the whole film is now kind of resolved. You're like, yeah, okay, finally
right.
we have a protagonist who understands that, like, this girl isn't just going to be his, and, you know, she's done with the fighting, regardless of what the outcome is. You know, she doesn't want
right.
she doesn't want to be part of this. Like, I think that came out nicely in the end, because it was what was kind of ringing false throughout the rest of the film.
Okay, so I know we talked about you doing this as the penultimate bad idea, but I feel like this is the perfect segue.
It is a perfect segue. Let's go
for talking
it.
About... Okay, so as we sort of started doing last week, we've come up with this idea, which we're referring to as the penultimate bad idea, which is like our secondary important bad idea, which... duh, that's what the word penultimate means. It's the second to last. And this week, we're coming off of this discussion where we've just had that we're talking about Scott earns the power of self-respect. He decides that fighting for Ramona is not, like, he's not fighting for Ramona, he's fighting for himself because Ramona is not a prize. Like, it's very much like a, you know, it's an important learning, turning journey point of the whole film. But it got me thinking about what is referred to as the manic pixie dream girl trope. Which, if you don't know for sure what that means, basically it's, you know, a really, like, interesting, quirky, like, cutesy, think every character Zooey Deschanel has ever played kind of girl comes into a town, and there, like, some dude becomes obsessed with her, puts her up on a pedestal, and blah, 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 all of that stuff happens. And I just, like, I mean, I think that the reason that we're going with calling this a penultimate bad idea is that a lot of times when you... Like, if you see people write, like, examples of the Manic Pixie Dream Girl, then they tend to include Ramona Flowers on that list.
She's one of the top ideas of the Manic Pixie Dream Girl if you were to ask somebody, you know, can you name some examples of the Manic Pixie Dream Girl trope? Ramona Flowers would probably be towards the top of everybody's list.
Right. Well, I mean, it, like, because in some ways it's very much true. You know, she talks about the subspace highways that run through Scott's head, and she dyes her hair every week and a half, and she, you know... has that thing where she's standing in her apartment and she's like, we have this type of tea and this type of tea and this type of tea. And, like, she dresses quirkily and she has, like, a giant hammer in her purse and stuff. And, like, the problem that I have with this trope, as I was telling Jesse, is that it's just so, like, boring. Like, you're blaming the quirky girl for being quirky. Like, by not calling it the boring average white guy obsesses over... mildly interesting girl who does what she wants trope, like, it's just another example of sort of, like, limiting the way that women can behave on screen, I think.
Right. Our bad idea is not the fact that Ramona Flowers exists as a character. We're not saying that. Like, we think Ramona Flowers as a character is a good idea. I mean, she's a very interesting character and she brings a lot to the story. So the fact that she fits into this manic pixie dream girl trope, which honestly started to be kind of illuminated around the time that this movie came out, it's not that it didn't exist before, but this was one of the first mainstream examples that a lot of people saw of, like, you know, manic pixie dream girl and some guy really obsesses over her and she's the best, she's the coolest, she's the geekiest, she's, you know, like...
whatever.
So, but the problem is not Ramona. Like... The problem with this trope is not ever the manic pixie dream girl, unless, you know, the writer themselves is writing the manic pixie dream girl as some sort of, like, way to express their own obsession over somebody who's impossible cool and real. Like, that's the only time we would have a problem with the character, because the problem is not with the women. The problem is the fact that these women who are just living their lives, like, Ramona is literally just living her life. She has a job at Amazon. She's wearing the clothes that she wants to. She dyes her hair. Like, it's just Ramona living her life. But Scott obsessing over her is what makes this into the trope. And that's the part that, like, is not great. And as we said, the movie ends up dealing with it in a pretty good way. Not in a spectacular way, necessarily. It didn't, like, blow the trope to pieces. But it did.
But by the end, you sort of get the, like, Scott has realized that he's wrong. He, like... sort of comes to, you know, realize that, like, he needs to do this for himself. It's not about, like, winning Ramona as a prize. So, like, that's good. Like, that's a good take on it. It's just, it's sort of reductive. Like, I guess my thing is that I kind of have a problem with tropes, right? Like, this is about to get, like, real, I'm gonna go out on a branch here and just, like, this is something that I've sort of come to realize. I think the problem I have with being like, oh, that's just a trope, is that people use it in the same way that they use the word problematic. Like, it means something, right? Like, yeah, we, like, addressing, I mean, I have, like, problems with the idea of the manic pixie dream girl trope just in general, but, like, addressing that, like, there is this sort of problem where there's lots of quirky and interesting women who are, like, chased after by boring average dudes in a lot of media, or like, you know, like the bury your gaze trope, or like the wife in the refrigerator trope, like anything where there's like, you know, like there are lots of, those are valid things that should be talked about. But the other, the flip side is that, like, people never want to talk about it on a case-by-case basis. Like, they just want to be like, oh, you use this trope, your media sucks. Like,
yeah, and that's the thing, is that when people look at something like Scott Pilgrim vs. the World, which has one of kind of the most obvious manic pixie dream girl tropes, they're like, oh, the movie's bad because it has the manic pixie dream girl trope in it. And that's not accurate. Especially when the movie does address it at the end. Now, there are media sources where it doesn't get addressed, where the manic pixie dream girl is still obsessed over by the average guy. He gets her at the end, like, he kind of wins her, and the, like, their relationship never moves past the fact that, like, she's the coolest, but she belongs to him now. And so, like, that is a problem. That's something right. that you should look at. That's when the trope is being taken in an unhealthy and unhelpful way as far as media is concerned, but this
right.
movie is not that.
Right, and I think that that's something that, like, it's something that people don't, like, want to get, I guess. It's not, and maybe, I don't think it's intentional, I don't think that this is something that people are doing with, like, malice, but there's very much this, like, sense that things in media are black and white, like, mm-hmm. you know, they're, oh, if you do... Like, clearly there are things that are black and white. I'm not trying to, like, make the case that, like, it's okay to use racial slurs just willy-nilly or anything.
There are things that are way past
there
the
are
line.
Things that,
gotta be shut
but,
down.
Like, the problem is that, like, using a trope isn't on that level. And, like, sometimes, like, a trope works in the context where it's like, you know, Ramona is the manic pixie dream girl and Scott learns that, like, he has to, like, be good enough for her. I mean, not to, like, be, that sounds really crappy too, but he has to,
well, no,
you
he
know,
has to work for their relationship,
right? He has to become, like, a good person to be with the person he wants to be with, instead of just like, oh, I defeated all your exes and now you have to date me. It's like, oh, right. I learned how to, like, own up to my mistakes and tell you both that I cheated on you and well, I defeated and this guy that kind of sucks, like,
yeah, he I think what Scott learns, too, is that he actually loves Ramona, because there is a difference between love and obsession. And a lot of times the problem
right.
with the manic pixie dream girl trope is that it's pure obsession. It masquerades
right.
under love. The guy is always like, yeah, I love you so much, but usually it's just obsession. Like, she's
right.
hot, she's interesting, and he's obsessing over her. And I think
Scott
right. starts out that way. Like, he sees this girl, and she was in his dream, and he's obsessing over her. He, like, asks people about parties, everything he knows about her. He stalks
right.
her. They actually say he stalks her. Like, he starts out from a
right.
very unhealthy stance of obsession, but by the end of the movie, it really is love. Like,
right.
you realize
he's doing...
that- He's come to terms with the fact that she dyes her hair, and he's come to terms with the fact that she has all this past, and he's come to terms with the fact that she's perfectly willing to let him go. Like,
right.
he was ready to just sit back and let her leave, you know? He realized
right.
that she might not want him, and I think coming to terms with that was what let Scott realize that he actually loved her. It wasn't just that she
right.
was cool, it wasn't just that she was interesting and sexy, it was that he wanted to be with her forever.
Right. Well, and there was also the, like, he has to, like, Ramona has to deal with her baggage, but, like, he's sort of a jerk about it at first, but then, like, his ex-girlfriend comes back into the picture, and, like, Knives is around, and, like,
yeah.
he learns a lot of the, he has a lot of baggage, too, and, like, he brings that to the table,
no,
and, like,
I think that's very crucial.
It's part of the, like, learning process.
And that's, too, when Knives dyes her hair blue, because... She thinks that part of why Scott is obsessing over Ramona is because she's cool and dyes her hair, which is,
right.
if that were really truly the manic pixie dream girl trope, unredeemable, that would have been one of the cases. He would just be attracted to girls with dyed hair and, like, it wouldn't
who are
matter
interesting.
That it's Ramona, you know? Like,
right.
But
oh, she's
Scott
quirky
doesn't even
and cute.
Look twice. He's just like, hi, Knives. Bye, Knives. Like, he's
right.
still, he's invested in Ramona as her own person. And I think that that scene shows a lot, both that, you know, it's not what she looks like necessarily that's keeping her there. And it's not the fact, and he has baggage too that he has to deal with. And they both do. It was a very equalizing moment.
Yes. That's where this movie does something really well with something that isn't a good idea. Like, that's, I guess what I'm saying is that, like, I get frustrated talking about tropes because people do this thing where they reduce media down to a trope. And it's not, like, that's not always enough. Like, they're, okay, so, like, Twilight, right? Like, it's the tropiest thing that's ever happened. And, like, dismissing it on the basis of, like, unhealthy, stalkerish relationship and, like, imbalances of power and, like, dismissing it on the basis of the tropes that it, like, uses is fine and probably good and something where, like, when you parse through it, like, Twilight is not an ideal piece of popular culture for people to, like, discuss and love and really take in.
Right. It probably shouldn't have gotten as big as it got because the tropes that it did deal with were toxic and not necessarily resolved in healthy ways.
Whereas, like, the example that, like, I'm thinking of is, like, I just am gonna veer off into talking about another podcast really quickly, but, like, the Adventure Zone podcast is out there, and, like, it hits on some tropes, right? Like, one of the characters, a huge part of his backstory is that his wife is dead, and there's this big tragic love story, which happens to be about, like, a pair of lesbian characters, but the thing about it is that I saw people get really fired up about those things. Like, it was things that, like, I've seen a lot of criticism of, but, like, by the same token, it's not like that there's other women in the series. There are other gay characters in the series. Like, it's not...
There's no tokenism.
Right, they're working those tropes in to, like, be part of a story that where they're not
right.
tokens.
Well, and like, going off on the Adventure Zone and his tropes, I mean, the trope you mentioned about Magnus and his wife dying and that being a huge part of his tragic backstory and motivation is that a lot of times that's cause for man angst.
I don't know, whatever
you want to call that, which is not good. It's just, it's not useful because it belittles the woman's character and it boils
right.
it down to kind of a plot point. That didn't happen. Honestly, listeners didn't even really know that backstory until much later because it was just quietly shaping the way that that character saw
made
the
choices
world,
and
made choices
like,
and made relationships with other people. It wasn't used as kind of this big, like, oh, he's so tragic, oh, he's so angry and upset, oh, he's so
right.
violent, but it's all because of this, so it's all redeemable. Like, none
right
of that
it
happened.
Was very much just a, like, it was just a piece. And I think that that's, like, that's what I'm trying to get at. Like, Scott Pilgrim versus the World very much does the same thing. Like, Ramona starts out, like, being very much the manic pixie dream girl, which, again, but, like, you know, she's interesting and quirky, and she dyes her hair, and she goes everywhere on roller skates, and the snow melts around her when she moves. But, like, by the end of the movie, she's Ramona Flowers, like, the girl that Scott loves, who has some baggage, and Scott Pilgrim is the boy who's come to terms with his mistakes and actually owned up to them and loves her and, like, brought his own baggage to the table. And, like, I brought up this other example because I think that people get so focused on, like, oh, tropes are bad, period, that they don't look beyond it and say, tropes can be bad. Tropes have the capacity, like, the reason we call them tropes is because there's lots of really awful examples of them in culture. That doesn't mean that they're, like, an inherent issue in every piece
right.
of media.
Well, and the thing is that every piece of media has hundreds of tropes within it to varying degrees. I mean, the thing about tropes is that we find them because they're patterns in media. They're patterns in the way people think. They're patterns in storytelling and the way that people think about stories and people and relationships and dialogue. Tropes exist because we are human, because we think about things and we do things in a certain way. That's where the patterns come from. So tropes
right.
aren't just bad. You know, the tropes that you hear about sometimes tend to be the ones that annoy people the most. That's
right.
why they're the most vocal about it. But you're going to have tropes all over the place. I mean,
right.
there's a trope in here where like, the gay best friend is a trope. Wallace
right.
is Scott's gay best friend. Is that overblown? Not necessarily. I mean, we'll talk about that later, but it's not necessarily a bad trope. And it's not something where you look at the movie and you go, wow, oh my God, this movie is such a tropey movie, has the gay best friend, can't watch it. Like, it's not...
Right.
Tropes aren't always the biggest deal. And tropes
right.
shouldn't always be your defining feature of how you think about a movie or any piece of media.
And that's why I sort of compared it to the idea of the word, like, at, like, 10 minutes ago when I was like, I think it reminds me of the word problematic. Like, there's a time and a place to address both of those things and say, yeah,
certainly.
This movie is tropey, and, like, or, oh, like, that scene was problematic. But the problem is, people like to end at, oh, that was tropey, or, oh, that was problematic, without saying, this is the reason why, this is how it was addressed later. Like, there's, I mean,
there's
it's,
more.
Like,
there's
that's how media criticism works. You always have to say more than just, like, it's why, like, people are still talking about Shakespeare, right? I mean, like, you can't just
yeah.
end with, like, a sentence. It's like, you have to say more, or, like, what you're saying isn't helpful. And I think that that's my, like, issue, is that people use tropes and lots of, they get into these ideas of media criticism and they have sort of a half-baked understanding of them, and then they say, oh, well, this is bad because blah, and it's like, well, that might be bad, but you have to give more reasons, or you're wrong, and this is good, and here's how, or somewhere in the middle even, and I really wanted to address that, because I've gotten very frustrated with it over the past 4 years of my life.
Right, and obviously it's something that goes within this context of this movie as well as without it. I mean, this is a pop culture-wide phenomenon where
right.
any piece of media is subject to these criticisms about its tropes. And criticism is good. Constructive criticism, where you look at something and you say, okay, this was not great. This could be done better in the future by other people producing this media or people producing media like it, and here's how this could happen. That's
right.
constructive criticism. That's something that moves media forward into a better stance, into a better frame of mind. But looking at something that's been produced, been created, it is done. The graphic novel series is complete. The movie is filmed. It has been produced and put onto DVDs. Like,
right.
you can't just say, like, this sucked and leave it at that, because that's unhelpful. You might as well just say, I didn't like this movie, and then that's your opinion, and you move on. But
right,
don't
like,
just
you're
call
allowed
it out
to not
trope.
Like it,
oh,
but
for
don't.
Sure.
You can't
but it's
just.
Not criticism, then. It's your
right.
opinion and your choice
right.
to like this movie.
Yes!
But it's not
thank
criticism.
You.
It's not something that helps further media that might be this kind of multimedia comic turned movie or graphic novel series with these quirky
right.
characters. It's not something that helps future media or even future endeavors of this director and this artist have ideas about where to go as far as as far as fan opinions on their content and what audiences are looking for as far as these tropes go. It's not helpful.
Yeah, it's you know, like, this is what I think versus this is what I think and here's why. And like, it's not, you're allowed to say that that's what you think, and that's fine. The problem is that people think that saying, oh, this is what I think, period, is, like, enough to sort of be the be-all, end-all of their statement. And, like,
right.
and like, and in a lot of ways, you're allowed to have opinions. Like, no one is saying that you can't have opinions. The problem is, like, you want your opinions to be defensible and constructive and helpful, like, there has to be more. And I
right.
think that people sort of forget that sometimes.
It's all on purpose. I think a lot of people have these opinions and they get very defensive about them. And of course, you're entitled to your opinion. But the problem comes when you think that your opinion should have weight with other people. When you think that other people should or should not watch these movies or these shows or read these books because of your opinion. If you
right.
think that creators should change how they're writing and creating these movies, these books, and their shows because of your opinion. If you think that future creators should change their plans and decide about what they're going to do because of your opinion, then your opinion needs to be educated, it needs to be comprehensive, and it needs to be constructive criticism. It cannot simply be an opinion.
Right, because no one's gonna change for you. That's such a good point. Thank you for putting that into, like, beautiful words. It worked very well. I'm very proud of you.
I'm
Thank
always
you
here
for saying
for beautiful
good
words.
You succeeded immensely.
Can we move on from this into something rather tangentially related? And I kind of mentioned it earlier, but
right.
we talked about the manic pixie dream girl trope, and we talked about how the content that creators make kind of has an opinion amongst audiences and the way it represents certain people and certain relationships. So I'd like
yeah.
to move into something that you brought up actually before the podcast, and that's about queer representation in this movie and in this series.
Yeah, I think that's interesting. We should hit on that.
So what Ellie and I were talking about is that it's kind of a mixed bag as far as queer representation in this movie goes, and it's really necessary to put the movie in context. I would like everybody to, you know, take a moment to think about when it was made and then realize that the graphic novels it was based on were made, drawn, and completed years prior, especially when they started. When these characters were created, it was many years prior. So it was the very early 2000s when this stuff was happening.
Right.
So we have to look at the queer representation in this movie in that lens, because if you don't, then you're not actually looking at its capabilities and you're not criticizing it in the right way. You cannot hold it to today's standards of media and queer representation in media because it was not made today. The stuff, these
right.
characters were created in the early 2000s, so we have to look at it in that sense.
Right, because like today there's some stuff that rings a little bit uncomfortably, like when Roxy shows up and all of the discussion around sort of Ramona, and she's like, I was a little bi curious, like super.
It defines that she's still straight even though she had an ex-girlfriend.
Yeah,
it's
Yeah, okay, that's what I was gonna say. She says it so casually, but casual wasn't the right word. It's more like what you're saying, where it's like very much like, oh, it was just a phase, blah, blah, blah. And like, you know, I mean, Wallace is super, he's gay, and that's fine.
He's very gay, yes.
And no one's really bothered by it. But he also, you know, he's kind of gossipy, and he's very like...
Well, and like, Scott introduces him to Knives as like, this is Wallace, he's my gay roommate. Like, right. You know, it's like in the first thing that people talk about him with.
Right, like, it's such a seminal part of like, oh, like, Wallace is gay. Like, so it's, on the one hand, like, when you're thinking about 2010, which is when the movie was released, like, there weren't tons of gay characters in media in general. So, I mean, clearly, there were still characters who were gay. Like, obvious. I mean, they're freaking... from all time, all books, everywhere, like, there are always characters who are gay.
Gay characters have always existed because gay people have always existed. We're not denying that. What we're saying is that the magnitude and the way in which queer representation was addressed at that point in time was still growing in mainstream media. Because that's what this is. This is a piece of mainstream media.
I mean, it was directed by frickin' Edgar Wright. It came out in
movie theaters. It had trailers on regular cable television. You know, like it...
Right, it was a big deal. Like, it came out in...
It was a mainstream movie.
It's not like an art house movie. It's not like a critic's choice film. I mean, it did pretty well with, like... It's got an 80-something percent on Rotten Tomatoes. So, like, it did pretty well. But it wasn't intended to be that sort of... artsy, really leans into the art community. Like,
and it's not a queer film. Like, it's not a film that set out to be queer, or even a graphic novel series that set out to be queer. It just happened to have queer characters in it. And there is a difference, especially at this point in time, in how that works. So our kind of conclusion from this is that Scott Pilgrim versus the World does a pretty good job, considering time in which it comes out.
We're still willing to address it as a bad idea because, like, just because it did well for the time doesn't necessarily mean it did super well.
Or that but it's we really also, good representation.
We also kind of want to, like, let it have the cultural context that it needs. And so we want to be able to, like...
Right.
It's just, again, saying, like, don't... You can't... It's something where you don't want to write it off just for being not perfect. Like, you can say, oh, this isn't great. And, like, that's what we want to do. We want to say that, like, oh, this is sort of a bad idea. Like...
Yeah, we're aiming for that constructive criticism that we just talked about. So recognizing that this piece of film is over and done, it was released in 2010. At that point in time, this was probably some of the best queer representation in mainstream media that you would see, where a character is blatantly gay and non-apologetic and doesn't, you know, get hurt for that. He's not
well, and
like,
no one expects him not to be. Like,
no,
everyone's just like, yeah, this
straight.
Is Wallace,
everybody
he's gay.
Knows, yeah, and he steals his sister's, or he steals Scott's sister's boyfriend, which I think is really funny. So, like, it's just, you know, there's, it's,
he does
allowed
it again.
To be gay, and he's not hurt for that. Like, nobody, like, isolates him. He's not, like, oppressed or anything. Like, he's allowed to be gay. And
right.
Roxy is allowed to be a lesbian, and the exes are allowed to not all be men. So, like,
right,
it's,
like,
for the time, it's pretty good, but it doesn't mean that there aren't some things that media could do better, and media has done better since. You know, this criticism,
like,
would be
know,
more constructive if we were in 2010 making it, so that
whereas we're making it in 2017.
We're making it in 2017, where queer representation has already gotten better. Not that
queer representation doesn't
have a far way to go.
It's not
perfect. It's definitely not perfect.
But
it's not even good sometimes. But it's better than this, and this was better than Mean Girls, which we talked about, which was released before it. And you know, Mean Girls, by having a gay character, might have been better than whatever came before that in mainstream media. Because again, we're talking mainstream. We're not talking about those things that set out to be really good at queer representation, or those things that, you know, really intend to hit a queer audience. I mean, this was a mainstream thing. It was made probably for mostly straight white people and people who buy movie tickets. You know, anybody could buy movie tickets. I'm not saying
people who are very much a part of,
like,
whatever mainstream
but, like, who
culture,
are part of a, yeah,
which tends
part
to
part
be
majority culture,
dominated in a lot of ways by certain, you know.
It tends to be dominated by a white straight viewpoint. The people in the audience are definitely not all white and straight. But that's what the mainstream media
is
goes from a perspective
not determined by, but like is sort of
it uses as base. Its base level is like a white straight man for mainstream media. That's like the basic assumption behind stuff.
And it's the like base level of like respectability, sort of. Not to like not to say that other things aren't respectable. Like, we're not trying to say that like things should be this way. We're just saying that in a lot of ways, even today, they still are.
Yeah, we're trying to recognize what qualifies mainstream media and the perspective that mainstream has. We're not excluding those who consume it. It's not a consuming thing. It's a production thing. The production of
right,
mainstream
yes.
media comes from generally a white, straight, male perspective and point of view.
And is designed for that point of view.
Regardless, other people consume
even it. Even in cases where it's not necessarily created by someone who has that viewpoint, which, like, clearly this, the movie was, I'm not sure if Brian Lee O'Malley is any of those things. He could...
I know he's male, at least. I don't know about
right?
his ethnicity or his sexuality. I could probably
right.
Google it, but...
But I
you
think
know, we
that,
can't run
I
off that assumption, but...
I think Edgar Wright is...
But even so, like Ellie was saying, you don't have to be white, straight, or male to fit your content to that perspective by simply making it kind of a mainstream consumable production.
Right. Yes.
Because there are just expectations for mainstream media, and if you follow those expectations, you are following along in whatever their perspective is.
Right. So the only... Well, we're... The big picture of what we're trying to say here is that we think that the... There are bad ideas in the way that queer characters are discussed or talked about or dealt with in this film, but we also, on the flip side, are trying to acknowledge that in a lot of ways, it's very much a, at least they're trying scenario, and like, while that's not necessarily quote-unquote good enough, it's more than others.
It's worth recognition.
Yes.
It's not necessarily worth applause or allotting. We're not trying to raise it up on a pinnacle.
Right.
We're just trying
Which is
to
why
recognize...
we're still acknowledging it being a bad idea.
Right.
But we
we're
also
just trying
like,
to recognize the context around which this media was created.
Are trying to go for both sides. It's, again, like, it's important to sort of
well,
explain
hard,
and
on,
define.
On this podcast, we go for bad ideas, right? We go for things that we look at and we're like, that's a bad idea. But this kind of stuff isn't that cut and dry. Obviously, we have to have a really convoluted conversation about it to even establish what we believe our own viewpoints are on it and to take in other viewpoints as well. So we're, well, I mean, if you're listening to us, obviously you realize that we are not like the end-all, be-all opinions on this kind of shit.
Right.
But,
oh, Lord, no.
But we're even just trying to look and talk within ourselves and see where we can get as far as, you know, what was the bad idea here and what is really bothering us about it and what is kind of the context around it in pop culture, because that's important too. I mean, the conversation is as important as the conclusion.
Right. Yes, especially with stuff like this.
Yeah. Yeah, the conversation's crucial. You can't simply have the conclusion. The conversation is crucial. Well, I mean, wow. We had two pretty, or one, I guess, if you want to count it all together, but two pretty comprehensive conversations. And we're getting about the time for the ultimate bad idea. So do you want to jump right into that?
The ultimate bad idea. And yes, that's, I do.
I like that better than the other jingle. I like that one.
We're getting there. I started with a fanfare. Okay, so our ultimate bad idea for this week is... That was a drum roll. Scott Pilgrim. Just
not
him.
Versus the world.
Just
Scott Pilgrim.
Scott himself. The
just
man.
Scott.
The myth, the legend.
We both found ourselves watching this movie and having lots of little moments where it was like, oh, that's a bad idea. Oh, that's a bad idea too. Oh, dude, such a bad idea from a character's perspective. And that character was always Scott.
Right. Like, Scott is, he is just like a walking, talking miasma of poor decisions and bad ideas and like...
A general lack of knowledge of how to be a person.
And garlic bread. That is it. Like, that is all Scott Pilgrim is bad ideas and garlic bread made into human form.
Because let's take this from the top. The movie starts with Scott Pilgrim is dating a high schooler. That's how the entire movie starts. Talk about a bad idea. What? Scott?
You are 22, Scott! 22.
You are 22, and she's like
17.
So first of all, I don't know about laws in Canada. That would probably be illegal in the US.
I mean...
Maybe, you know, considering she's a minor.
Yeah, but
they
she's 17.
They don't do anything. They haven't even held hands. So, like, probably not.
It might not
but
be
like,
illegal, but it is, like,
regardless,
morally questionable.
It's a bad idea.
Because Knives, being in high school, has no kind of concept of, you know, what it would mean to be to be girlfriend and boyfriend with an actual adult who's lived a lot more life and generally had more experiences, even though Scott doesn't necessarily show it all the
time. Right, and even though he's not that much older than her, but, like, the places they are in their lives are so different. Like, Scott lives in an apartment with his roommate, and Knives is in high school.
And he's got a band, and he just does stuff, and she is very much in tune with her friends and the daily gossip and whatever she's a fan of.
Right.
And, I mean, my thing just is that, like, regardless of the age and the difference in experience, like, it's just not good. Like, like Kim points out, I think, that it's just total rebound.
Right.
Like, he broke up with a girlfriend that was pretty comprehensive. They were very similar in age. They had a lot of experiences together. And it was a nasty breakup. And he just kind of falls to this girl that he knows won't ever ask him anything. They haven't held hands. They don't expect to kiss.
Right.
But, you know, they're never... There's no expectations there, so he just feels safe. But, like, that's not a good idea. That's not going to go anywhere.
Right.
It's unfair to Knives, because she's going to view this as, like, an actual relationship, whereas you're just viewing it as, like, you're in between, I'm going to feel better about myself relationship.
Right.
Like, it's such a bad idea.
Well, and he, like, he even sort of treats Knives like that. Like, there's a point where they're having a conversation, and she's, like, really complimenting his music and stuff, and then, like, she starts to talk about...
Envy, his ex-girlfriend, and her
parents. Yeah, and is saying, like, how cool she is, and Scott, like, shuts her down and then is like, can you go back to talking about me? And it's like, dude, like, that's not cool.
No, and then he moves on from that to becoming obsessed with a girl who he doesn't even know, which, bad idea. We already went over why that's a huge bad idea.
Right.
And he continues to stalk her, bad idea, and then he actually spends the night with her and enjoys himself, which, like, whatever. So you like this other person, now break up with your fake high school girlfriend.
Right.
Which multiple people tell him. Wallace is like, you should do it, like, 3 times. And then his sister calls and is like, you're thinking of juggling 2 chicks at once. And he denies her, but it's like, Scott, that's what you're doing.
She's not wrong,
like,
Scott.
If you're hanging out with this other girl in a date-like fashion, you were even going to have sex with her until she decided she didn't want to. Like, you were ready to just do that.
Right.
You cannot have a girlfriend.
Right.
I don't care who she is. You can't have a girlfriend.
Like, it's just bad.
Especially when he's already been cheated on. Like, that's how his last relationship ended, is Envy cheated on him, and he was, like, upset.
Right.
So, like,
why would he do that to someone else?
He's just such a bundle of bad ideas. Like, he doesn't ever think through his actions. So all his actions are bad ideas. He just does stuff, and it's always bad.
Like, even after he breaks up with Knives, because he does actually break up with her. I don't think we should keep seeing each other anymore or whatever. And, like, he doesn't even do that very well. Because it's not, like, he's not, like, I don't want to say forceful. Because, like, forceful isn't how you break up with people. But he's not,
he's not definitive.
Right.
He's just kind of like, I think it's over.
Right.
And that was about it. And then he felt sad for a little bit and automatically felt better just by realizing that he was going to go see Ramona.
Right.
Like, there was very little guilt there. There was very little recognition of the thing that he just did and the effect it had on Knives.
Right.
Like, and he goes back to the band and they ask him and he doesn't even, like, realize what they're asking. He, like, forgot all about Knives.
Right.
Like, that's... It's so bad. It's cringy.
Yeah, he's like just, I don't, like, it's the beginning of just a succession of, like, why are you like this moments.
And, yeah, I mean, he just has such bad ideas. And, like, oh, like, inviting Ramona to the band that he's gonna play at when he knows Knives was gonna be there because she was so excited about it for, like, at least a week.
Right! He doesn't even, like, think about it.
That's a complete lack of thought. He's just like, yeah, I like you. You should come to this thing. This thing where my girlfriend happens to be. What?
Right!
What? It's just bad ideas all piled on top of each
other. Right, well, and then, like, even he breaks up with he breaks up with Knives. And then he and Ramona are, like, dating. And then he finds out about the League of Evil Exes. And, like, he's, like, so shitty to Ramona about it. Like, he acts like she...
He's so shitty to everybody about it. Like, Wallace is like, you had this coming. And there was an email about it that he just did.
That's a bad idea. Like, it literally says duel to the death. And he's just like, I'm so bored. And I was like... Someone is threatening to kill you. Like, they just said the phrase duel to the death. Like, how are you bored?
At least read
it. At least finish what you're saying. Like, make it all the way through, buddy. You got so far.
Right, well, like, the whole part where, like, around the fourth Evil X, like, around the time when Roxy shows up, and he and Ramona are kind of, like, fighting, because he's, like, done with being, like, fighting the Evil right. X's, but he's acting like it's all her fault.
Right!
Like, he's, like, attacking her for having X's that are homicidal. And she's like, I don't know what right. to tell you, because I'm not an Evil X. Like, what do you...
want?
What do you want from me?
Right!
I literally live my life... and it's not my fault they're attacking you. Like,
right.
But he's being very shitty about it. He's being all, like, coy and, like, you know, well, this is your fault. And I felt like I was having a nice evening. And then all these people keep attacking me. And it's like, he's blaming the wrong person. He's not blaming the exes. He's blaming Ramona.
Right. Whereas, and, like, he, it's frustrating a little bit. Because, like, it takes his ex-girlfriend showing up and, like, sort of messing with him in, like, a non-homicidal way, sure, like, messing with their relationship, for him to sort of, like, get over that, and, like, I don't know, the fact that he doesn't just immediately, like, shut down envy, and, like, he can't, like...
Scott's very slow on the uptake.
He just can't... Right, which is another, like, bad idea for Scott. Like, he can't see how other people are affected by the things that he does, and he can't see how the, like, the things that affect other people aren't always their fault.
Well, and, like, he's slow on the uptake in interpersonal ways, and he's also slow on the uptake with himself, and just in general, like, his general environment. Like, he doesn't seem to ever recognize that Kim has, like, basically hated him ever since they broke up, even though they're in the same band. Like, he just kind of skates past it all the time, and, like, okay, a small bad idea for me is that he never, like, the first Evil X that shows up, whatever, he has no idea what's going on. He's like, why does this guy want to fight me? And it takes a lot of effort for him to actually fight him back, because he has no idea what's going on. But, like, after that, you know all these other people are gonna come fight you for Ramona.
Right.
Like, be ready, dude. Like, there's... every other fight throughout the movie, basically until Gideon, he's like, oh, an ex? Oh, and then like five punches later, he finally starts the fight. Like the guy with the stuntman punches him in the face and goes, can I have your autograph? And then he like gets grabbed. Like, Scott, you know what's going on here.
Like, get
stop
ready.
Being an idiot and just like actually hit them back. Like, get ready to fight because you know they're an ex and you know what's going on. Like, don't just stand there like a dumbass. Like, he's just made of bad ideas. He's like chronically incapable of having good ideas or doing things in a functional manner.
Well, and like, the other thing about the League of Evil Exes is that, like, it's the League of Evil Exes, right? And like,
yeah,
like, Ramona is very like, they're my exes, and she's very like gender non-specific about it, and Scott always says ex-boyfriends. And so when Roxy shows up poofing into existence like all of the other exes do, like, he starts fighting him. He doesn't even know what's going on, because he like,
yeah, he's just like, please leave me alone. And
why?
No,
I don't
want to
do this right now.
That, like, this random person hitting him is probably with the other random people that have been hitting
him. Like, it's so like painful to watch Scott go through his life.
And it takes him literally seeing Roxy in person in that club to get it. Like, cause the whole scene there, like, leading up to it, he's like, evil ex-boyfriends. Ramona's like, evil exes. Ex-boyfriends, evil exes. Ex-boyfriends, evil exes. Okay, why do you keep making that distinction? And then Roxy shows up and he understands. Like, Ramona's been doing that the whole time and he didn't even question it.
Right! Like, he's just so dumb. Like, he's kind of dumb. Like,
he doesn't have a lot of common sense. He just has no kind of instinct for...
or, like, ability to think? Like, he doesn't think critically about anything.
Ever.
Like, he just
he
sort of...
he honestly doesn't.
Does.
The only time he thinks in the movie things. Is when he dies. Like, he dies and he's alone and he literally has eternity. And that's when he chooses to actually think about something.
Right.
Like, that's the moment when he comes to the realization of, like, oh, I should fight Gideon because I think he's...
a tool douchebag, right?
Not because of Ramona, and oh, I've been chasing the wrong thing, and oh, I've been very mean to the people that like actually care about me. I should fix that. Like, that's the only time in the movie when he actually thinks about that stuff, and it took him dying.
Right, literally got stabbed.
Literally,
like,
dying.
It's on the one hand, like, yay, Scott finally got his shit together. But on the other hand, it's very like, Scott, why?
Well, like, that's the whole movie. You just sitting there going, Scott, 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 Scott. And everybody else around him going, Scott, Scott,
Scott,
Scott, dude, Scott, Scott. Like,
right.
The whole movie.
Oh, gosh. I forgot that for the first, like, 30 minutes of this movie, I just sort of can't stand Scott. He gets incrementally better as the movie goes on. Like, you know, he does finally break up with Knives, and, like, there are parts where you could sort of see him, like, start to have this, like, change. But, like, the first 20 minutes, I was like, Scott is a useless person. Why does Ramona even consider dating him?
Right. Well, I think that's, like, the point, honestly. Like, I think when the movie starts, you're supposed to look at Scott and be like, wow, a deadbeat. Like, you know, like, he's dating a high schooler. He has no idea what he's doing with his life. He's in a shitty band. Like, all signs point to Scott being kind of useless.
Right.
He doesn't even own his own stuff in his apartment. Like, he owns one thing in the apartment. Like, when they tag all the stuff as Wallace's. Like, all that is meant to do is to show you that Scott is not, like, a functioning human being. That he's really just kind of wasting his life. Because you're not supposed to necessarily like him. You're supposed to find him exactly as what he is.
Right.
He's kind of a floater. And then
it
changes.
He sort of becomes better. It's very, like...
Right. He grows into stuff.
In some ways, it's almost a coming-of-age story.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wherein Scott... Or coming into yourself, I guess. Because, I mean, it's not really a coming-of-age. But that's, like, the sort of idea that it fits in.
Story, a self-growth story.
Yeah, right. Where you come... By the end, you're a better person than you were when you started. And, like...
Right, right. And you've... figured out how to have functional, healthy relationships
and sort
with
of
your family and
maybe
your
deserve
and your
the things that you
and...
have and, like, are willing to, like, work for them and figure out how to sort of be worthy of, like, stuff that you might have anyway, which I think is a big, like, it's one of Scott's biggest growth points. Like, he did go on dates with Ramona, and he, like, he had, like, friends that supported him and his sister, you know, like,
yeah,
and he was still sort of a douche, but by the end of the movie, like, instead of having to, like, lose everything to gain that, he got to, like, keep all of these things and then realize that he needed to, like, become worthy of them. And I think that's a really interesting and good story to tell, because I think there's a lot of things where people, you know, it all has to get ripped away from you to realize what you had. Whereas, like, Scott gets to...
Right.
Scott sort of gets it all ripped away from him because he dies. But, like, you know, the viewer, that he didn't really die because you remember him getting the one-up. Like...
Right.
It's cool.
I think the duality of that ending, though, is what's really crucial, because the first ending is exactly what you and Scott both expect.
Right.
It's what most movies and media sources would go to. He's there at Gideon's. He's fighting for Ramona.
Right.
He sees his band, and they're kind of, like, you know, feeling
guilty.
Like they made a bad choice, so it shows that he maybe made a good choice by not signing on. Like, he's kind of proved right, you know, like he comes in and he, like, fights all these guys, and he goes up against the big bad by himself, and, like, he has all sorts of trouble, and he doesn't want to admit to the both girls that he cheated on them. Like, he just wants to defeat the big bad and get Ramona without ever having to touch that.
And
like, that's a selfish victory. Like, that's what he went in for the first time. And then he died, and he has this moment of growth. And when he comes back, it is the movie's way of saying that's what he expected. That's what sometimes you're brought up to expect, is that selfish victory is the true good ending. But it's not. It's troublesome. It has bad ideas in it.
Well, and, like,
let's,
like,
fix those.
Not to say love isn't enough, but it is to say that, like, love is only enough if you are trying. Like, you can't just expect the fact that you love someone to fix everything. You have to be willing to work for it, because that's what love really is. Like,
right.
Love is about, like, it's, you know, like, learning to do things because they're the right thing to do, and to make better choices, and to, like, do the best that you can because there's this person that you want to do the best you can for. And, like, that's what Scott gets.
Right. Well, love is about equality. And that's the thing, is that Scott's power of love is only the power of his own love for Ramona.
Right.
Ramona is still just kind of on her own.
So
his love, without her love, is not enough.
Right.
To conquer all this stuff that stands in their way, and to conquer all this mayhem and trouble. I just think it's... The ending duality is really telling, because it allows Scott to fix a lot of the things that he thought that were not good thoughts. He had better ones. He came in, and instead of ignoring the band, he apologized to Kim for for the way that he treated her and for the way that they broke up. And he, so he mends his relationship with Kim. He doesn't even look at Gideon or Ramona yet. He's like, I need to fix this first. This is a friendship that was around long before any of this stuff started. And it's not due for a fix. And I have the opportunity now, so I'm going to fix it. He tells Kim he's sorry. He tells young Neil that he's doing great and that the band is where he should be. You know, he affirms him, and he the friend who's the band leader, he's like, yeah, you guys did well. It's good. Like, it's good stuff. He gives his friends the equality that they've been missing in their relationships with him, where they support him, but he doesn't really ever support them back. He's finally giving back the support. He's finally giving that equality in these relationships.
Right, not to be like, you're not worth being around people if you, like, haven't figured that out yet, but he sort of, it's about, like, becoming worthy of the love and respect and support and friendship and even, you know, like, romance that these people are giving to him.
And realizing the value that those things have for you. Realizing that they're not just things that are in your life that you feel like you could maybe take or leave, but no, they're people in relationships that you do cherish and you want to keep around and you don't want to just leave.
And that people like Gideon who don't understand that are, not to be like reductive, but like bad. Like the reason that Gideon needs to like be fought by Scott isn't so Scott can win Ramona, it's because Gideon is a crappy person and he like, that's why you need to fight him, because he's the big bad guy. And it's not, he's not the big bad guy because he has Ramona. He's the big bad guy because he's a bad dude.
Right. And he doesn't value love and he doesn't value friendships and he doesn't value the things that Scott himself has grown to value and has learned to value.
All right. So our ultimate bad idea for this week was just, it was right there. It's right in the title of the film. Scott Pilgrim versus the world. Bad dude. Bad idea. Not a bad dude. We just covered that. He grows to be quite a good dude. So if you enjoyed this bad ideas foray into the wonderful world of Scott Pilgrim, then we would really appreciate it if you would take the time to subscribe to our show on iTunes or Google Play or wherever you get your podcasts, and just, you know, maybe give us a rate or a subscribe. I already said subscribe. The word is review. But like, you know, if you're really into it, we do this every 2 weeks. We sit down, we talk about media, we talk about bad ideas, we talk about whatever else pops into our minds. And if you really, really liked it, or you know someone that's a big fan of something that we've covered, we would really appreciate it if you would share our show with them too.
We can also be found on the internet, of course. Our one-stop shop for all our links to everything is allideasarebadideas.wordpress.com. And on that same site, you can also find a link to our coffee page where you can buy us a coffee. And that's a real cheap and easy way to support us in a monetary fashion if you feel like we deserved it.
So, this has been All Ideas Are Bad Ideas, and we will see you in 2 weeks.